housekeeping. So we're going to meet this Monday night. We're meeting next Monday night. The following Monday night, which is, I think, something like, what is it, May 9th, something like that, I'm going to be in New York for the ACO conference, the Association of Kashrus Organizations conference. So I'll be out that Monday night. And right now, I think I'll be out the Monday night after Shavuos as well. But otherwise, the plan is to go into June. That's what we usually do in a normal year. Not that we've had so many normal years recently. But in a normal year, we go into like mid-June when people start going away. So we'll figure out how long we can go for this season. So I noticed when we were doing the Daf Yomi, the last week or so, there was the sugya, one of the really perplexing sugyas regarding Yuchsin that comes up today, halacha l'maisa. We get a lot of shailas really in the Beis Din world with respect to this case, and that's the case of a Jewish woman who has relations either through being married civilly or through being promiscuous, has relations with a non-Jewish man, and they have a child. So there's a question, what's the status of that child? We know as a general rule, we say that we follow matrilineal descent, so the main thing that we look at is who's the mother. The mother is Jewish, the child is Jewish. If the mother is not Jewish, then the child is not Jewish. But the story doesn't end there. The question is, okay, number one, is the child completely Jewish? Does it depend on circumstances, whether or not we say that the child is Jewish? Does the child have to go through some sort of a pro forma conversion ceremony? If the child is a girl, is she allowed to marry a Kohen? Do we say that, okay, she's Jewish, but maybe she's not allowed to marry a Kohen? What if the child is a boy? The child is a boy, so do we say that there's some stigma attached to the child? What would be the stigma? If the father is not Jewish, the child can't be a Kohen or a Levi. So it's not a question of eradicating the child's kahuna or Leviya status. But what if that boy, let's say we would treat him as the equivalent of a cholo. So then what would follow is that if that boy, that son, had himself a daughter, so then maybe we treat her as a chalala, so she wouldn't be able to marry a Kohen. So do we ever say that? Is that this comes up. Sometimes you have this in adoption cases. A family will adopt a child, and they'll check out the mother, and they'll confirm that the mother was unambiguously Jewish. However, we've discussed adoptions in the past. However, that is verified. But the father wasn't Jewish. That's maybe one of the reasons that the child was put up for adoption. So the child that's adopted is a son who is the product of that relationship, to say that we have to wait for the next generation and tell them, oh, if you have a daughter, that daughter can't marry a Kohen. How does that work exactly? And if there's a daughter who's the product of a relationship between a Jewish woman and non-Jewish man, and we say that daughter is not allowed to marry a Kohen, let's say she does marry a Kohen. So what's the child then of the child who's born to the Kohen? Do we say that that Kohen, that child, is a Kohen Cholo? Do we say he's an invalid Kohen? And then if he would go and marry, let's say, a woman who is prohibited to a Kohen himself, so what would be the status of the next generation? So I gave out these charts because this is all confusing, but all of these questions arise. All of these questions arise. And you can see there are four different generations. There are four generations of questions. One question has to do with the first generation, namely that's the relationship itself, the non-Jewish man with the Jewish woman. Second generation of what happens if they have an offspring that it's a son or that's a daughter. Third generation, what happens to the next set of offspring from either the son or the daughter. And then the fourth generation. So let's go through these different generations. The Gemara itself, is a sugya, the main Gemara. There are a few Gemaras, but the main Gemara is in Yevamos Daf Mem Hei Amud Aleph that describes the relationship and has a machlokis between a number of different Tanoim, different Amoraim, as to what the status is of this child. And there is one opinion that says that the status of this child is that the child is a mamzer. That if you have a non-Jewish man and has relations with a Jewish woman, that the child is a mamzer. Another opinion says that the child is kosher, that the child is considered to be kosher. There's a Rashi in Kiddushin, Daf Samaches Amud Beis, who indicates that, well, if the child's a mamzer, that means the child's Jewish. because you can't have a mamzer who's not Jewish. In order to be a mamzer, one prerequisite is that you have to be Jewish. So that opinion holds that the child is Jewish. The one that says the child is kosher holds the child is not Jewish. So therefore, the child is not a mamzer. The child just has to go through a conversion. Once the child goes through the conversion, the child will be 100% kosher. That's what Rashi seems to say in Kiddushin Daf Samaches Samibes. However, the simple reading of the sugya is that if the child is kosher, the child doesn't require a conversion because there's a question as to whether, let's say the child is a daughter, whether she's allowed to marry a kohen. Obviously, if she would have to go through a conversion, she wouldn't be allowed to marry a kohen. That's the way we hold like the shita of the chachamim against Rav Shimon ben Yochai, that even if somebody, a girl, converts when she's below the age of 3 years old, she's not allowed to marry a kohen. So obviously then that wouldn't be a question. But the Gemara indicates that this is a question mark, and the Gemara says that there's an opinion of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, who says that the child is kosher, but on the other hand, the child is a mekulkal. The child is a little bit messed up. What does it mean the child is messed up? So the Gemara says, l'kuhuna, that's about the seventh line down, l'kula amarai d'machashi modu sheblad pogam l'kuhuna. All of the amarayim are of the opinion that the child of this relationship is kosher, agree that the child would be pogam l'kuhuna, would be defective with respect to a kohen. So Rashi, on this Gemara, Daf Mem Heyam and Aleph, says what that means is we're talking about a daughter. A son has nothing to do with a kahuna. A son is, he can't be a kohen. And we don't say that a kohen is, that we wouldn't say that he would be prohibited from having a relation, from marrying a kohenes. Because a woman is a kohenes, a woman who's a bas kohen can marry anybody she wants. She can marry a man who's a chol if she wants. If she's a bas kohen. So when we say that there is some sort of a restriction in terms of marrying a kohen, it's going on the daughter. That a daughter is not allowed to marry a kohen. So that seems to be the maskana of the sugya, except that the Gemara goes on and it says at the very end, as if you turn the page or two in the materials, so the final halacha is v'hilchasa, in the last paragraph, v'hilchasa ovi kochavim v'evid ababas Yisrael. If you have the situation of a non-Jew or an Evid Kanaini, a non-Jewish slave that was taken into enslavement by a Jewish master, and they have relations with a Jewish woman, havlad kosher, the blood is 100% kosher. And this is sort of an interesting twist. This is if a non-Jew has relations with a single Jewish woman or with a married Jewish woman. She's married to another Jewish man. Normally, if someone commits adultery, the child is a mamzer. But in this particular case, we say if the adultery that a Jewish woman committed was with a non-Jewish man, the classic case of adultery that the Torah discusses, when the Torah speaks about the classic case of mamzeres, I should say, classic case that results in mamzeres, is a man has relations with his father's wife. So he can have relations with his father's wife, but his father's wife is permissible to other Jews, to his father, or if his father should divorce her, she'd be permissible to somebody else, never permissible to him. But the relationship of a non-Jew and a Jewish woman is always prohibited. It's never going to be permitted to anybody. So therefore, only a case where the woman could be permitted, where the relationship could be permissible under some circumstances, you could have a marriage with the person who's going to create mamzeres. So only then would mamzeres be created. But with a non-Jewish man having relations with a Jewish woman, that's a marriage that would never be permissible under any circumstances. So therefore, it can't result in mamzeres. The blood is always going to be kosher. So the Gemara concludes the blood is always going to be kosher, and it even gives an example of a particular man, Rav Murray, who had a Jewish mother, Rachel, but had a non-Jewish father, because the father was a captor. He later converted to Judaism, but before he converted to Judaism, he was a captor who had taken a Jewish woman into captivity, and they had Rav Murray. So Rav Murray only had a Jewish mother and non-Jewish father, and he was appointed to a great position of authority. So we said, but a convert is not allowed to be appointed to a position of authority. The Torah says, "Mikarav achecha, some tasim alecha, that you can only appoint people to positions of authority if they were born Jewish. So we say, yeah, hakivin dima misua mikarav achecha kivinim bay, because his mother was Jewish, so that's good enough. So some of the commentators point to the fact that even though in the middle of the sugya there was a line that said all the Amoraim who held that the child is kosher agree that the child, if it was a daughter, the way Rashi learns the sugya, that the daughter would not be allowed to marry a kohen. By the time you get to the end of the sugya, that's not true anymore. By the time you get to the end of the sugya, the end of the Gemara still doesn't have that qualification. It just says a blood kosher can be appointed to positions of authority. The child is 100% kosher. So it's not entirely clear that we're even going to be stringent at the end of the day to say that that the daughter is going to be prohibited from marrying a kohen. In fact, there are some entertaining stories that the Gemara tells in the middle about various rabbanim, including Rav and Rav Yehuda, who said that the child of this type of mixed relationship, the non-Jewish man and the Jewish woman, that the child is kosher, is considered to be permissible, and where they advised a person from this union who wanted to get married, who wanted to have a good shidduch. So they said, well, some families may abstain from making a shidduch. They'll say, oh, your father's not Jewish, so we don't want to make a shidduch with you. But it's not a good reason, because you're perfectly kosher. So Zil Itmer, you should go and you should hide yourself. You should run to another town. You know, go to some place where they don't know your family history. Go to Milwaukee, whatever. You know, just to get away, get out of Chicago. Go to, you know, some other Des Moines. Go to, I don't know, Omaha, whatever. And we won't tell on you, and you'll find that yourself a nice shidduch, and then after you're married for a few years, and for a year or so, and you have a child, and you want to call in, you know, the family for the bris, or maybe they'll come to the wedding, but whatever. Let's say they didn't come to the wedding, and you'll say, and you'll tell your wife, oh, by the way, my father is in Georgia. Ah, it'll be too late. So that was the suggestion, and we see from here that there was no concern, certainly regarding future generations, if they were recommending, these rabbanim were recommending that a product of this union, a male product of this union, should go and hide himself. Certainly it wasn't a problem for a male product. You could distinguish between, for a male offspring, you could distinguish between a male offspring and a female offspring, but that's a question whether we should make that distinction at all. So why did we assume, let's say go back, why did we assume that there would be a problem with the child marrying a kohen? So the Gemara gives the Kal Vachomer. It says that we would derive from some sort of an a fortiori type of reasoning, me almana, from the case of an almana, a widow who marries a kohen gadol. It's about 8 lines down in Sur Zion. So an almana, ma almana le kohen gadol, sheni sura shavu b'kol, a widow is not allowed to marry a kohen gadol. That's a pasuk in Parshas Emor. A kohen gadol can only marry a besula, who he can only marry amana gusha. He's not allowed to take lo yikach. He's not allowed to marry a widow. So ma amana le kohen gadol sheini sura shavu b'kol b'na pagum. If a kohen gadol married a widow, a regular kohen can marry a widow, but a kohen gadol is not allowed to marry a widow. If he married a widow b'na pagum, so then the child is pagum because it's lo yichalel zaro b'amav, that it creates a cholo situation. And that's a case where the almana is not prohibited to everybody. She's only prohibited to a kohen gadol. A widow can even marry a regular kohen. And nonetheless, if she married this man she's prohibited to, the kohen gadol, the child's going to become a chol. A child will become invalidated from the kahuna. So zushi sura shavu b'kol. So this iser of a non-Jewish man marrying a Jewish woman, which is prohibited to everybody, there are no exceptions to the rule. It's not only a prohibition for a woman who's the daughter of the Kohen Gadol, that's prohibited for everybody. So, eino din shepenah pogum. So, certainly, the child should be deficient. So, there are a couple of problems with this Kal Vachomer. Number one, the case of a man of the Kohen Gadol is a prohibition that's recorded in the Torah. Rabbi Kiva Eger points out, prohibition of a Jewish woman from having relations with a non-Jewish man, that's not necessarily a prohibition in the Torah. The Rambam understands that it's a prohibition of los tiskatein bam. The Rambam understands that it's a prohibition when it says you're not allowed to marry the nations of the world, so that's a prohibition that you can't get involved with a marital relationship with a Jewish woman, can't get involved with a marital relationship with a non-Jewish man. A Jewish man can get involved with a relationship with a non-Jewish woman, but not everyone agrees with the Rambam. The Torah says that prohibition, number one, it only applies to the seven nations of the world. and the seven nations, not the world, the seven nations that occupy the land of Israel. Number two, is a prohibition after they convert. There's a special rule. Most of the people in the world, after they convert to Judaism, you're allowed to marry them, but the seven nations that inhabited Israel, those Sechaya Kol Nasham, the Torah says, you aren't allowed to even keep them alive, so you weren't allowed to get married to them after they converted to Judaism. But there's no Torah prohibition. There's obviously prohibitions. Maybe it's Halachal Moshe Sinai prohibition, or it's a rabbinic prohibition. Maybe it's Divrei Kabbalah, it's Psukim in Navi, that to have the prohibition. According to the Torah, there's no actual Torah prohibition. It's something which you're not supposed to do, but in terms of it being a verse in the Torah that prohibits it, there's no verse in the Torah that prohibits the Jewish woman from having relations with a non-Jewish man. Even according to the Rambam, the prohibition only applies if it's Derech Chasnus, if it's Los Yischatein Bam, that they're going to enter into a marital relationship. If the Jewish woman has a fling, she has a promiscuous one-night fling with a non-Jewish man, has a child, even the Rambam would say that there's no actual Torah prohibition. So it's not actually equivalent to the case of Almana. You could say the case of an Almana, number one, it's a Torah prohibition. Even according to the Rambam, it's a Torah prohibition even in the context of a non-marital relationship. And here, even according to the Rambam, it would only be a prohibition in the context of a marital relationship. Number two, it says the Maharshal, in his commentary on the Gemara here, he says it's not a good Kal Vachomer for another reason. It's not a good Kal Vachomer because in the case of the Almana, if you have a son that's born, so the son is going to be a Cholo, the son is going to be an invalid Kohen because he's born from a Kohen Gadol who is involved in an impermissible relationship for a Kohen. But here there's no Kohen in the picture. It's a non-Jewish man with a Jewish woman, and we don't find that chalolus is produced outside of the context of prohibited relationships with Kohanim. And here this is not a prohibited relationship with a Kohen. So says the Maharshal, there's not going to be any problem with a boy, it's only with a son. It's only a special rule that we're imposing on the daughter that we're saying she's not allowed to marry a Kohen. It's probably some sort of a din derabbanan, some sort of a rabbinical law.
Is there a disqualification for Levim working in the Beis Hamikdash?
There's no disqualification for the Levim. You mean who had a relationship with a...
Is there some idea of a Chala Levi that he can't work in the Beis Hamikdash? It's like a Kohen can't
work even in the case of Pidyon HaBein, we say that if there is a case where a Bas Levi, even though a Bas Levi is also excluded from needing the Pidyon HaBein, so the Gemara Bechora says that if you have a Bas Levi who has a relationship with a non-Jewish man and a child is born, that child is still exempt from Pidyon HaBein. So says the Maharshal, we don't really have a real Kal Vachomer over here. In fact, the Rebbe of the Ritva said something absolutely astonishing, which is not relied upon by Poskim, but it's there. You know, if you're a Posek, you got to know all the different shitas that are out there in some of the dire situations that arise. So one of the things that we all know very well is that a woman who has relations with a non-Jewish man, then she's not going to be allowed to marry a Kohen. So that's what the Gemara says over here. The Gemara says that, maybe we would have qualified the case of a Manal Kohen Gadol, said, well, that case is worse. We understand why a child is disqualified, because she herself becomes Miskalela. She becomes a Chalala when she has relations with the Kohen Gadol, because it's a prohibited relationship with a Kohen, with a Kohen Gadol in this case. But we don't necessarily have that here. So Rabbi Yochanan says, yes, you do, because there's a pasuk that says that when it comes to a truma, if you had a woman who was the daughter of a Kohen and she married when she was the daughter of a Kohen, she could eat truma. Then she married a non-Kohen and now she can't eat truma anymore. But if she becomes divorced from that non-Kohen or widowed from that non-Kohen, she didn't have children and she goes back to her father's house, she can have truma, she can eat truma again. So that's the pasuk.
Vas Kohen can see it.
What?
She had children.
She had children, not so. But if she had didn't have children, she just goes back to her father's house, she can eat truma again. Shenema uvas kohen kisiya amana agusha, mi sheyesh lo amanus u'gegevishin ba, yasu obi kachom ve'evet shein lehem amanus u'gegevishin ba. So the Rabbi Yochanan, in the name of Rabbi Shimon, derives that this is only in the case of a Jewish woman who was married to a man where she had a valid marital relationship where she could become a widow or become a grusha. But if she had a relationship with a non-Jewish man, where it's not considered to be a valid, she couldn't have a valid marital relationship with him in the first place, so she could never become halachically a widow or a divorcee from him because we don't recognize the marriage in the first place. So then we say she can never go back to being allowed to eat shum again. She becomes disqualified. So that's the pasuk from which we derive that she would become disqualified from a kohen. So everybody knows this rule. Maybe it's based on the fact that we treat her like a zona, because we say anybody who's a nivela lepasula, any woman who has relations with a man who is prohibited to her, and that includes a woman who has relations with a non-Jew, that where the kiddushin would simply not become effective, and kiddushin tov simba, so then she becomes disqualified in the future for marrying a kohen. Everybody knows this rule. That's why I remember that maybe 20 years ago or so, they were trying to help out women who are balos tshuva. Maybe they were in college, they had relations with a non-Jew. That's the world where we live in. We live in a very promiscuous world. So maybe she had relations with a non-Jewish man, and she can't marry a kohen. So there are a number of women who are balos tshuva. They're very pious and righteous and wonderful women, but they know that they can't marry a kohen. And sometimes it's a little uncomfortable to try to find the shidduch. A shidduch is proposed for them, and they have to ask, oh, is he a kohen? And or they find out that they have to do some research to find out the fellow's a kohen. They can't go out with him. It becomes a little uncomfortable for women like that. So 20 years ago, I don't know if they still do this, but I remember they made a special Shabbaton, a kohen Shabbaton. A Shabbaton for the single men who were kohanim, and the women who knew that they were prohibited to marry a kohen, so they knew to stay away from that Shabbaton. So this way, you know, there was no question that the kohanim, you know, wouldn't have to suddenly discover that the woman, you know, that they were interested in was prohibited from marrying a kohen. It's a little bit awkward, you know, because imagine two, you know, friends told each other, oh, you're going to the Shabbaton? You know, I don't know. So it probably didn't last for, you know, that reason amongst others, but everybody understands this rule. So the Rebbe of the Ritva says, well, when you get to the end of this sugya, you get to, I don't think I have this in the sources, not that it's a scandalous Ritva, but you have to, you know how to read it properly. It's the Ritva in Kiddushin Dav Samach Esam and Bey. So he quotes his Rebbe as saying, well, since the conclusion of the Gemara is that the offspring of of this relationship of a Jewish woman with a non-Jewish man really are kosher, and he's assuming that there would be no disqualification from kahuna, that we would allow a daughter to marry a kohen, because the bottom line of the Gemara doesn't have this qualification. So he said, we throw away this kavachom altogether, like the whole question of saying, oh, maybe the kavachom is not good, because after all, in the almana, she becomes miskalelis, as opposed to the woman who has relations with a non-Jew, she doesn't become miskalelis. We said, no, yes, she does, because she's not allowed to eat shum. He says, no, we did away with all of that. So really, this doesn't make a woman disqualified from marrying a kohen. So the Ritva said that when he heard this from his Rebbe, he pointed out there were like 10 sugyas, you know, that you could just very easily find scattered throughout the Gemara. Like, for example, a shvuya. We say that a kohen is not allowed to marry a woman who was taken captive because maybe she had relations with the captors, and the captors are not Jewish. So he said, how do you explain that sugya? He said, it doesn't make any sense if you say that a woman's not going to be disqualified from marrying a kohen if she has relations with a non-Jew. So he said, obviously we distinguish between, it could be that maybe the children won't become disqualified, but the woman, by definition, whenever a woman is nibbalo lepasula, whenever she has a relation with somebody who's off limits to her, so she becomes disqualified from the kahuna. So he said that after he made all of these impassioned arguments to his Rebbe, so his Rebbe, who's it, which was Rebbe? The Ra'ah, I think. So his Rebbe gave in. His Rebbe said, you're right. So that's how we generally assume, that there is no opinion out there that says that if a Jewish woman has relations with a non-Jew, that the woman would be allowed to marry a kohen afterwards. Because even the Ritva's Rebbe had this only as a habamina, but in the Miskana, at the end of the day, he gave in, and he agreed with his Talmud, the Ritva, that a woman would be disqualified. Throughout the centuries, though, this particular shita sometimes has come up. Sometimes it's quoted. There was some major disaster that occurred. Where was it? In Austria or something, where the women were, they ran away from the husbands. Maybe they were taken captive, but then they started voluntarily, you know, living with the men who took them captive. Maybe they were Muslims, whatever it was. Eventually they came back and they wanted to do tshuva and they wanted to come back to their husbands. So there was a ruling at that point in time. Who was it? The Truma Sadesh. I'm trying to remember. The Dalki Moshe quotes it at the beginning of Eben Ezer, that they said that they'll make a special takana because Harasha, special harasha that they allow the women to go back to their husbands because they decreed afkinu rabbanan lekidushin mineh. They decreed that they're just invalidating all this as if they were never married to their husbands in the first place. Therefore, they, even if they voluntarily were with these other men, they never really are considered to have cheated on their husbands, and they can go back to their husbands, and even the Kohanim. Even with the Kohanim, the wives can go back to the Kohanim. So everybody asks, but even if I say Akinu Aban Lakidushimine, if they had relations with non-Jews, it doesn't matter if they were married or not married to their husbands. Still not allowed to go back to their husbands. Everybody asks this kasha. They say, it doesn't make any sense. How could they have been maker with respect to the Kohanim? So I think Rav Avadya Yosef in a particular place says, oh, maybe they relied upon the Rebbe of the Ritva, this Havamina, the Rebbe of the Ritva in this particular case. So it comes up sometimes. But that's way out there. That's a way out there shita that we don't assume is really true. But in terms of, but the real question that is very halacha l'maisa is we assume that the Jewish woman who had relations with a non-Jewish man, she's not allowed to marry a Kohen anymore. But what happens, what do we say about her daughter? How do we really paskin? Do we paskin like the middle of the sugya? Do we paskin like the end of the sugya? The middle of the sugya indicated that the daughter can't marry a kohen. The end of the sugya indicated she can't marry a kohen. The Rashi, when he interpreted the middle of the sugya, seemed to indicate it's only a question about the daughter but not the son. But does it apply to the son as well? So on both of these issues, there is machlokis. So with respect to the daughter, it's a three-way machlokis. So the Rambam, when he codifies this halacha, the Rambam does not indicate that there is any kind of a limitation with respect to the daughter. Indicates that it would be perfectly fine. If you take a look at source Klap Aleph, I have a lot of sources here, but we don't have time to go through all of them. So I'm just pointing out the ones that are most important to see right now. So the Rambam says, Akum ve'evet ha'babas yisol ha'blad kosher ben penuya ben meishisish ben ma'onis ben barotzah. A non-Jewish man who has relations with a Jewish woman, the child is going to be kosher. Does he say anything here about that if it's a daughter, she can't marry a kohen? The Rambam is mum on the point. So the Magen Mishnah talks about this. He says, yeah, that's the maskan of the Gemara. That's the Magen Mishnah source Chaf Beis. This is the Rambam Hilchos Bia Perek Tesvav, Halacha Gimel. So the Magen Mishnah says, yeah, that's the maskana. The Hilchos Akum Ve'evet Ababas Yisrael Blad Kosher Be'em P'nuyim Be'em Meishisish. The child is always going to be kosher. V'yesh Mishikasa Shim Yelda Bas Shi Pesula Lekuna. Says there is an opinion. That's the Rush. The Rush on the Sugya says that when the Gemara at the end says that the child is kosher, it just means the child's not a mamzer. But of course, the child, if it's a daughter, she can't marry a kohen. That's what the Rush says. The Rush says that we assume that that's 100% the case. She wouldn't be allowed to marry the kohen. V'haramban zal, and he says the Ramban, however, it says that it's a suffix. If you look in the Rif is source. Ches, on page 2, the Rif says that some say that the sugya should be interpreted as going according to the middle line, which said that everyone agrees, even if the child is kosher, that the child is allowed to, that the child is pogum lakuna. Be a daughter, she couldn't marry a kohen, but then four lines before the end, the last two words, v'chasinan rabusa acharini, but there are others who say that in this case, hablad kosher, v'lo misayim ishe hablad pogum. They say the blood is 100% kosher, and they don't say that there's a defect with respect to the child. He said, we're not really sure which is the halacha, and therefore, what's the halacha? What's the bottom line? Towards the end of the second to last line, and therefore, the halacha is the blood is kosher. We don't say that the blood is pogum. But then he said, but he started off by saying, but we're not sure. So then Muke Yosef said, yeah, he said we're not sure, but he was really sure. Because at the end, he ends up saying that we don't say that the blood is pogum. But the Ramban says no, because there are these two different opinions and two different ways of reading the Gemara, therefore we're really not sure. We would not allow the daughter to marry a Kohen. But in the event that she did get married to a Kohen, we don't force them to get divorced. That's what the Ramban says. They have blood suffik cholo. And then he says the blood is a suffik cholo. Who's a suffik cholo? So as the Ramban wants to say like this, the Ramban wants to say that if it, they had a daughter, you look in the Dor Sheni, the second generation, look on the right side of the page, and the daughter would marry a Kohen, and then they would have a son. You see the son in the Dor Shlishi, the third generation. So according to the Ramban, that son would be a suffik cholo. That son is a suffik. We're not sure if he's a kosher kohen or not. We don't know if he's a kosher kohen, because it could be that it was really prohibited for the daughter to marry a kohen. It could be this is a nisser, sounds from the Ramban. It might be a nisser deraisa, and therefore the child that would be born would be maybe a cholo, maybe would be an invalid Kohen, in which case he could marry a Grusha or a Gioris, could marry a woman normally prohibited to a Kohen, but it could be he's not an invalid Kohen. It could be he's a Sabbat Kohen. The general about a Sabbat Kohen is that he has to marry a woman who's permitted to marry a Kohen, and he's not allowed to defile himself to corpses. He can't go to a cemetery, and we're also not going to let him duchen. He's going to have all the chumas. He's going to have all the stringencies. Maybe he's a good Kohen, maybe he's not a good Kohen. He's going to be a Sabbat Kohen. But the Ramban says something else extraordinary, which is in the Dor Sheni, on the left side of the page, if there would be a son who is born of this union of the Jewish woman with a non-Jewish man, says the Ramban, that once I say Pogum, Pogum doesn't only go on the daughter, not like Rashi says. He says the Pogum would go on the son as well, and therefore, if that son then had a daughter, that daughter would not be allowed to marry a Kohen. If you look at the Dor Shlishi on the left side of the page, if the son, this son now has a daughter, so I have next to the daughter a Kohen. If that daughter marries a Kohen, it could be that the son who's in the fourth generation, the question mark, is himself going to be a Sapek Kolo, because the Ramban says that whatever status we're going to ascribe to the daughter, we're going to ascribe to the son as well. So the son who's born in the second generation from this first generation Jewish woman who married a non-Jewish man, or had relations with a non-Jewish man, so the son himself is not going to be prohibited from marrying anybody, but his daughter will be prohibited from marrying a Kohen. That's what the Ramban says. So that, the Maharshal says, is crazy, because we don't find that there's such a thing as chalolus, a Kohen defect, when the relationship was not a Kohen relationship to begin with. It was just a non-Jew who married a Jewish, who had relations with a Jewish woman. So that opinion of the Ramban is generally not accepted lahalacha, but it's just kind of interesting to know that it's out there. If it would be accepted lahalacha, say all these adoption cases where a person was adopted, let's say and had a Jewish mother and a non-Jewish father, so people know if they adopt a daughter, so she can't marry a Kohen. But they don't assume that you have to keep track if they adopted a son, that if he has a daughter, that daughter can't marry a Kohen. But that's the opinion of the Ramban, because the Ramban doesn't really distinguish between the two of them. So he says that it really would be a serious issue. He says it really would be a serious issue, and he assumes that it's a suffix, that it's a question mark how we would treat this situation.
Let's say, I know with Mamzerus, I think you said once that there are some cases where you don't ask. If a person, let's say the marriage, is your mother Jewish? Yes. Father Jewish? Yes. Are you going to go back to the grandparents? In other words, do we purposely ask about grandparents? Or once we know the parents are okay, we stop there and we don't look for trouble?
We don't look for trouble. Look, I ask whenever I'm interviewing, people in order to check out their Jewish status, I always ask about four questions regarding previous generations. It's a matter of responsibility. I ask whether any intermarriages, whether any conversions, were there any adoptions, and whether any divorces. Those are the four questions that I ask. And if the answer is yes to any one of them, so just I have to research a little bit further. The first time I was having Masada Kiddushin, I'm not blaming anyone, for Kol HaScholos Kashus. I remember after I performed this wedding, so one of my chaverim, came over to me because I had a lot of trouble. The local rav gave me a hard time because apparently he wanted to be Masada Kiddushin. I don't know, whatever it is. So one of my chaverim said, Kol HaScholos Kashus. This means you've really begun in the Rabbanus. Okay, fine. So it was very difficult. The first time was Masada Kiddushin. So I sat down with the parties. Like I knew the people. I knew them to be Jewish. It wasn't much of a question. And then one of them, at one point, said, did my mother speak to you? So I didn't know that meant anything. It was like a code expression. Did my mother speak? Like, I figure I'm asking the questions. They're answering the questions. Both your parents Jewish, suva, whatever, everything, looks in order. So his mother didn't speak to me. I don't know what his mother wanted to speak to me about. Like, I don't know what, flowers should be on the table. I have no idea. But then I discovered afterwards the reason he wanted his mother was supposed to tell me that his biological father wasn't really Jewish. And apparently it wasn't something that they advertised or publicized or anything like that, that he himself, she had had a relationship and then she ended up marrying the Jewish husband at the right time, so everything looked like it was normal, but in reality his biological father wasn't Jewish. Okay, so he was still Jewish, but I learned my lesson. I learned that you have to pay very close attention to everything that
people But you don't necessarily ask about non-Jewish relationships. Convert those four things you mentioned. I mean, you don't ask a fifth thing.
I said, were there any intermarriages? Right, well, again, right, so that's part of the idea. You know, where was the child born? Or adoptions. Adoptions will also lead in that direction. Right. So it is relevant, at least in terms of the daughter. So what's the halakha in terms of Shulchan Aruch? So the Rambam seems to hold that everything is hanky-dory, that the Mishnah Lamelech interprets the Rambam otherwise, but the simple reading of the Rambam is that the Rambam, and that's how he's generally understood, that he holds that the maskan of the sugya is that there's no problem, that obviously this Jewish woman shouldn't have had a relationship with a non-Jewish man, but at the end of the day, the child is not a perfect kal v'chomer, as we mentioned, to assume that there's a stigma that needs to be attached to the child, whether it's a son or whether it's a daughter, it won't be any stigma. Even the daughter will be allowed to marry a kohen. But that's not how we paskin Shulchan Aruch. If you take a look, the Shulchan Aruch makes such a big point about what the halakha is going to be. There are three different times. If you look on page one, three different times the Shulchan Aruch tells us that the child is going to be pagam lakun in this case. In Simen Dalet Sipei, that's source Aleph. In Simen Dalet Sif Yutes, all at the beginning of Evan Ezer, you'll read it. Obdei Kachom Evan Shabal Mamzeres, the Blar Mamzim, Baal Bas Yisrael, if a non-Jew had relations with a Jewish woman, Ben Penuya Ben Eishishish, whether single or married, have lot kosher, the child will be kosher, not a Mamzim, Upagam Lakuna, child will be Pagam Lakuna. And similarly, in Simen Zion Sif Yut Zion, Obdei Kachom Evan Abal Bas Yisrael, Beyodom Imenu Bas, if you had a non-Jew that had relations with a Jewish woman and they had a daughter, also Abbas Peguma Lekahuna, this daughter is going to be Peguma Lekahuna, she won't be allowed to marry a Kohen. So you have it in all of these different places that the Shulchan Aruch assumes like the opinion of whom? Like the Ramban probably. That's what the Beis Shmuel says. The Beis Shmuel says, if you take a look at source test above, he says, Elish Pogum. So what are the ramifications that the child is Pogum? So if Mesupa Pugzeh Mehem Pogum Lekuna, the Rif had his Sopik, whether the child really can't marry a Kohen, the two different ways of reading the Gemara. The Rambam Kasher Deim Sherim, Beis Shmuel assumes as a matter of course that the Rambam holds that they are Kasher. El Rosh, but the Rosh says, no, they're definitely Pogum Lekuna, and he held that the Kal v'chomer was a valid Kal v'chomer. So what's the Psak Halacha? Three lines down. Psak Halacha Nir L'chayre, B'dievet Emot Simim Nisei Slakoin, that we assume that they would the girl, the daughter, shouldn't marry a kohen. But if she did marry a kohen, then we're not going to force them to get divorced. The halavam and kosher, because the Ramon said it's kosher. Again, the Rif Ramban, Emosin, and the Rif Ramban have a suffix, and they say therefore that you wouldn't force them to get divorced. And the Maharshal also, you know, held the kavachomer wasn't such a glatt kavachomer, and that everybody should be kosher. So therefore, says the Beis Shmuel, for these reasons, if they got married, we're not going to force them to get divorced. Now, is it always going to be the case that we say that the child is at least Jewish? So here, there's an opinion of the Marit Malgazi. This is source Yufes. The Marit Malgazi says, no, they're not always going to be Jewish. When is it that if a non-Jewish man has relations with a Jewish woman, that the child will be Jewish? And it's only a question as to whether, if it's a daughter, she can marry a Kohen. It depends on which parent raises the child. This is what he says. He says, if the non-Jewish father raises the child in his non-Jewish way, then the child is non-Jewish. And if the Jewish mother raises the child, like she has a fling with this man who's not Jewish, and then she goes and, you know, finishes her pregnancy and gives birth, it has nothing to do with this non-Jewish man ever again, and raises the child in the Jewish day school system and everything else, so then the child is Jewish. And he says, because that's what the pasuk says. It says, that you shouldn't take a non-Jewish girl to give to your son because and you also shouldn't give your daughter to a non-Jewish man. It says both things. We derive from that pasuk. What do you mean? Ki yasiras bincha me'acharai. It means that he, the non-Jewish son-in-law, is going to lead your grandson astray, that only your grandson is going to be from your daughter is going to be Jewish, but otherwise your grandson from your son who marries a non-Jewish woman, forget it. There's nothing even to talk about because that's not even considered to be bincha. So he says, this is how you teach the pasuk. He says, when is it that from your daughter it's going to be considered to be Jewish? That's that is if the non-Jewish son-in-law is not going to be involved in the upbringing. Because if he is going to be Yasiris bin Chamei Acharai, then it won't be your son anymore if you're going to allow your non-Jewish son-in-law to be the one to raise your child. So the Maharid al-Ghazi has this whole drasha in which he decides that on his own, basically, that it's all going to depend upon who raises the child. Rav Shach, in the Avi Ezri, quotes this Maharid al-Ghazi, and even though the Rav Shach, you know, came hundreds of years, you know, later, he said, are you kidding me? Yishtakei adava v'lo yamariz kazos, says the Maharid al-Ghazi made this up out of whole cloth. There's no such thing. But you know who also came up with something similar? None other than Rav Moshe Feinstein. If you look at Source Yates, Rav Moshe Feinstein said, well, maybe we don't have the distinction of the Maharid al-Ghazi, but he says that the way he reads a certain Tosfos is that if you have a woman who is herself nishtamda, she apostatized to like another religion, a Jewish woman, and now she marries a non-Jewish man. So says Rav Moshe that, well, if she married a non-Jewish man and she herself is like living a non-Jewish life, so then in that case that the child's really not going to be treated as Jewish. And according to him, the child would have to undergo a conversion, Yesha Hatzrich Geiris in such a case. And only when the woman maintains her Jewish identity do we say that when she marries a non-Jew, the child is Jewish. So, needless to say, neither of these opinions are followed the halacha, but there is a view of the Nesivos HaMishpah, who's quoted in the Pesachei Tshuva, who says, well, nonetheless, they should still go to the mikvah. There's a famous tshuva by a famous shtickel Torah by Rav Natali Tzvi Trop, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, the great, you know, Rosh Yeshiva of Radin, who taught alongside the Chafetz Chaim. Rav Natali Tzvi Trop says that in this case, where you have a non-Jewish woman, a non-Jewish man who has relations with a Jewish woman, the child is part of Klal Yisrael. The child is part of the Jewish people, but is lacking Kedushas Yisrael, but is lacking the holiness of the Jewish people, and therefore has to undergo a conversion in order to be transformed into having Kedushas Yisrael. So he says that the conversion gives the child Kedushas Yisrael, and this is the reason why the Gemara in Bechorah says that the child gets a pidyon habeim, because the child has Kedushas Yisrael, but the child's not going to have that, the child's part of Klal Yisrael, but the child's not going to have the Kedushas Yisrael to be accorded all the privileges, responsibilities, obligations of Klal Yisrael until they go into the mikvah. Once they go into the mikvah, so then we affirm their Klal Yisrael status that they always had. So this is all very fancy schmancy lumdus, but at the end of the day, we don't really paskin like any of these different opinions, except Rav Aaron Soloveitchik did require a child who was born from a Jewish mother, a non-Jewish father, to go to the mikvah, apparently relying upon, you know, some combination of these different svaros. But then again, that was also very, very much out of the box. But I have confirmed this with the Talmidim of Rav Aaron Soloveitchik. I've tried to get in writing exactly where he develops this thought, and he does have a couple places in writing where he reads this into his interpretation of Tosfos. He doesn't say, and by the way, this is how I feel, halacha lemaisa, but apparently this is what he told people. So lemaisa, we say that the woman, a daughter, a son is basically okay. We don't worry about the opinion of the Ramban. A daughter, we say, should not marry a Kohen, but if she did marry a Kohen, she doesn't need to get divorced. Okay, she doesn't need to get divorced. So what does that mean? Does that mean only because this is sort of like a lechatchila sort of thing? So the question mark that's asked on this is, well, if you're really worried, like the Ramban says, that the child is a suffik cholo, the Pesachei Tshuva quotes this question. If the child of this union is going to be a suffik cholo, that's going to create problems of like Kohen status for future generations, why don't you force them to get divorced? You should require them to get divorced. We find that in other contexts, that if the child's going to be potentially prohibited from like having being treated like a kohen, that we say to the kohen, you're not allowed to stay married to this woman. So the Shara Melech says it doesn't mean that the kohen is allowed to remain married to the woman. It means that because there's an opinion, namely the Rambam, that says that he's allowed to be married to this woman, therefore we can't compel him to divorce her because maybe that will be a get meusa, maybe that will be a compelled get that's not justified according to halacha, so the get will be invalid. But on his own, he should really divorce her. So Rav Moshe Feinstein was asked the question about a couple that was living together, a non-Jewish man together with a Jewish woman. They're living together, and Rav Moshe Feinstein was asked the question as to whether it's considered to be a good idea, since they're living together anyway, that we should allow this couple to do what? This was the case. A non-Jewish woman and obviously can't get married. But this was the case. The non-Jewish woman and the Jewish man had a daughter. The daughter is living together with a kohen. So the question is she allowed to marry the kohen? So do we say that since if they would get married, we're not going to force them to get divorced? They're living together anyway. Maybe we should allow them to get married. That was the question that approached that Rav Moshe Feinstein. No. This is I said the case wrong. I corrected myself. The non-Jewish man and the Jewish woman had a daughter. Okay. This daughter now is living together with a kohen. Okay. So the question is do we say that since if they would get married, we're not going to force them to get divorced? Because maybe it's okay, like the Rambam says, maybe it's a suffix, like the Ramban says, so we're not going to force them to get divorced. Therefore, they're living together anyway, so it'd be better that they live together in holy matrimony rather than in unholy promiscuity, and that we should therefore allow this marriage to take place. So the Igros Moshe says that no, because it's not like we're saying that b'di'evit is okay for them to stay married. B'di'evit, we're not going to force the Kohen to divorce her if they are married, but it's not a good thing for them to be married. And therefore he says that in this situation, even though they're living together in sin anyway, it's better for them not to be married. Especially the Rambam says, if you have a prohibited Kohen relationship, it's worse if they actually get married, because only then would they be Malkus. Which is a strange argument to make, because according to the Rambam, this would be presumably a 100% permissible relationship. So it's kind of funny to make that argument according to the opinion of the Rambam. And furthermore, he says, and anyway, according to many opinions, if they're living together outside of marriage, it's not an Issa Deraisa anyway, it's only an Issa Derabanan, if she's not a Nida for a Jewish man and Jewish woman to live together. But of course there as well, the Rambam holds that it is an Issa Deraisa, though maybe the Rambam wouldn't hold that way if it was in the context of a marital relationship, but meaning even a civil marital relationship as opposed to a halakhic, marriage relationship, but maybe the Rambam would say that if it was completely promiscuous or completely, random. But it's a strange argument, or peculiar. It's one that's a little bit hard to understand on the part of Rav Moshe. But at the very least, Rav Moshe certainly makes it clear that you're not that there's no special heter shasat kaki di'evid dami. Rav Yosef, Shlomo Amar, Rav Shalom Mashash, all of the Sephardic post-Gemineris Yisrael say otherwise. They say no. When we say that there's no obligation to get divorced, if the daughter and the Dor Sheni, the second generation, would marry the Kohen on the right side of the page in the second generation, that means that if they're very in love with each other, or they're living with each other, and maybe they're she's a balos tshuva and he's a bal tshuva, and this is going to set them back if we don't allow them to get married. So you can take all of these considerations into account to allow the marriage to go forward. And many of the post-Gemineris Yisrael follow this approach. You have a daughter who is born from a Jewish woman who had a relationship with a non-Jewish man. They say that if she's really desperately in love with a Kohen, they'll allow her to get married. Others say, come on, that's pushing the envelope. Even Rabbi Avadi Yosef was only Mekel when he had like other sfeikos, where there was a question, was the father really not Jewish? Maybe they were just, you know, the mother said that the father was not Jewish, but we don't know for sure. Maybe the father really was Jewish. Maybe the fellow's not really a Kohen, because there's not sufficient evidence. He comes from a non-observant background. He's not really a Kohen. But if you know the guy's a Kohen, and you know the father is a non-Jew, so a number of contemporary posts can say, come on, who are you kidding? Even Rabbi Yosef was not lenient in those situations, absent these extenuating circumstances. So this is an ongoing debate amongst the poskim in Eretz Yisrael, how lenient to be about this issue. Some are extremely lenient, and some feel that in those cases where it's clear that the daughter came from a non-Jewish father, and it's clear that the boyfriend is a Kohen, and they're not even already married civilly, so you can say, well, maybe halakhically that's considered like they're married anyway, so you're not really changing anything, then there are contemporary poskim who are much more circumspect about being lenient. But then the next question, and we'll finish with this question that arises, is Dor Shlishi, third generation. Let's say we do allow them to stay together. We're not requiring them to get divorced, or we are going to be mako, like these Sephardic poskim say they can get married. So what happens to the next generation? Is the son who's born, does he dochen or not? Is he a Kohen? Is he kosher? Can he? Is he a cholol? Is he a kosher? So we got this question in the Bezin a few years ago. There was somebody from this type of a situation. The mother was a Jewish woman who married a Kohen, but her father was Jewish, even though her mother was her father was not Jewish, even though her mother was Jewish. So she was the daughter, the mother herself was the daughter of a non-Jewish man and a Jewish woman. She had married a Kohen, now has a son, and the son wants to marry a woman who is a Grusha, who's divorced. So do we say, oh, well, he's a Cholol, so he can marry? So we said, nothing doing, because number one, according to the Rambam, he's 100% kosher. And according to the Ramban, he's only a Suffolk Cholol. You have, you know, the opinion of the Rosh, maybe, who would say that he's definitely a Cholol, perhaps, but you have two out of three, you know, major opinions that would say either he's 100% a Kohen Kosher, or he has to treat himself with the stringencies of being both a Kohen Kosher or, you know, not a Kohen Kosher. We said that he would not be allowed to marry a Grusha in this particular case. This question was submitted to both the Sri Deyesh and the Chelkas Yaakov. Those are the last two sources that I have. The Sri Deyesh said that this fellow from the third generation, he has to treat himself as a Suffolk, and therefore he says that despite the fact, you could make the argument that when the Gemara says that only a daughter is Peguma, so that means that even if I say that the daughter can't marry a Kohen, that's just a special rule about the daughter, but sons, even though that from that daughter, are never going to be affected. But he says that since the Rush would hold that this is a real Cholol situation, so we have to be machmis. So you look at the last line here, L'chein l'aseis koladeis tov sheben ha-Kohen yizayim l'aseis kapayim, he should not duchen, because maybe he's a cholo. Below the Thomas the Mason, and he shouldn't be defile himself in a cemetery. About, he'll give him one dispensation. He'll say, I'll let him get called up for Kohen as an Aliyah. That's not so bad. Alalos the Torah Rishon. Okay, you know, maybe he's a Kohen Kosher, and even if he's a cholo, so it's not the end of the world. You call up a non-Kohen to get the Kohen Aliyah, not the end of the world. I mean, he didn't ask me. I don't know that I want to give up my Aliyah so fast, but it's all right. Shane Isali Yisrael, I'm a Kohen. Sheyesh, El Sheyesh Mitzvah, the call the Kohen. That's in that there's no prohibition for Yisrael to get the Kohen Aliyah. It's just that there's a mitzvah to call up a Kohen. Yesh L'Hakel Lav, he should be Mako.
Are there situations where a cholo wouldn't duchen but gets an aliyah?
Are there situations where a cholo wouldn't duchen but would get an aliyah? Sure. We give all the time a cholo will say, let's say you can give him achalon, you can give him aftir, you know, if you don't want to embarrass him. The truth is that it's not such a stigma to be a cholo per se. If a person is definitely a cholo, it's not the end of the world. I know a distinguished rav is a cholo. There's a tradition in his family, really several generations. I don't know, some great-grandfather married a woman who was prohibited to, okay, his last name is a Cohen-sounding name. And he just, like, told me, you know, he said, yeah, sure, you know, I'm a Cohen, and, you know, his wife is fine with it, and everyone's fine with it. He's a Cohen. No, he doesn't get a Cohen Aliyah. He's treated like a regular Israel. He's a Cohen. But what it means is that his daughters, because he's a Cohen, his daughters can't marry a Cohen. If he has a son, that son can marry whomever he wants, but that son's daughter can't marry a Kohen. If that son has a son, that son can do whatever he wants to, but that son's daughter can't marry a Kohen, and so forth and so forth.
Two questions. Yeah. We never talk about cholo status midrabanon versus cholo midraisa. When you talk about cholo, is it always deraisa?
Sometimes we do talk about cholo status derabanan, in which case there could be more room to be mako, but it's not clear that the Ramban seems to be treating it like a suffix cholo deraisa type of situation. Now Rabbi Kiva Eger assumes the whole thing is only derabanan, because of the fact that the isser in the first place was not an isser deraisa, so therefore he says the whole thing is only derabanan. But the more derabanan, once I say that it's derabanan, so for sure I can't treat this son. Who's born from this relationship is a Kohen Cholol to be allowed to allow him to marry a Grusha. So that's what the Chilkas Yaakov says. You look at the Chilkas Yaakov, and I know we're going, not so bad. All right. So if you look at the Chilkas Yaakov, says this is exactly what he's worried about. He says if we're going to be too restrictive with respect to this child, this grandson, on the right side of the page in the Dor Shlishi, who's the product of the daughter of the Jewish woman who had relations with the Jewish man, who then married a Kohen, even though she really shouldn't have married a Kohen, but we didn't make her get divorced from the Kohen, or maybe we were so nice that we said, you're engaged, we'll let you get married anyway, because she went to a Sephardic posek in Eretz Yisrael, and then they had this son, so if I'm going to say to this son, I'm going to restrict you from duchening, then this son may say, wait a second, if they're not letting me duchen, even if I'm getting called up for the Kohen Aliyah, maybe this really, I'm not really a Kohen, because if I really had to treat myself with the restrictions of a Kohen, then they would let me dochen. If I can't even dochen, then I'm gonna go out, I'm gonna marry a convert, I'm gonna marry a Grusha, like clearly, I'm not seriously considered to be a Kohen. So Chilkas Yaakov, that's what he might say, so Chilkas Yaakov, Yaakov Reich said that we have to be, very, very worried about that. And he says that therefore he would be inclined to say that in this particular situation, especially given the opinion of Rabbi Kiva Eger that this whole thing is only Drabbanan altogether, you have all of these opinions like the Rambam that says that he would be 100% a kosher Kohen. So he says that we should be especially careful not to be mizalzel b'kuhunasel, right? And he says, kiven de paskina, if you go back about, he says, since we paskin, b'dievet ein motzir miyado, that at the end, the mother was allowed to remain with her husband, the Kohen, so that would seem to indicate, if that's the halacha, that we're not worried that the child is going to be a cholo, because if we were really worried that the child is going to be a cholo, then we never would have allowed the mother to stay with her husband, the Kohen, in the first place, and just produce all of these chololim unnecessarily. So therefore he says, Bahasalikna, so this is the last paragraph, Bahasalikna shalolizal so bikunasal shaben anolad, lemano milalos lukduchen, that we should not degrade in any way his kahuna to prevent him from dochening. The sechuma shiavil the kula, because this is a stringency that's going to lead to a leniency. Omiya shiodea tim medina saelo, aimi ten yadla nashin kohan li sarato mikdushas kahuna. I mean, I can tell you that we get these shilos 10 times a year. I mean, I don't even know if that's a guzma. Some years it's 10, some years it's 5, but I get the shilos a lot. People call me up and say, what can I do to relinquish my kahuna? Because as you have kohanim, especially older single kohanim, becomes very difficult for them to find women who are permitted to marry kohanim, and they're really looking for ways out of it. So he says, don't give people an out, so that they're going to even be asking the shilos. It's much better to allow the duchening. He says that it could be that there's room to be mekel. There's an isser anyway if you call it the duchen and you don't duchen. So he says that there's room to be mekel with respect to the duchening, especially since the chances are that the person really is supposed to be treated as a kohen kosher, at least on a deraisa level. So he says that that's his bottom line with respect to this horah. But both the Chilkas Yaakov and the Sri Deish agree that he could get the Kohen Aliyah, and both of them agree that he would certainly be prohibited from marrying a Gusha or a Giyaris. If he did marry a Gusha or a Giyaris, so I leave it as a question mark in my fourth generation, exactly how we would treat this child. But again, if we are taking the halalos, you know, seriously, so then presumably the daughter would also have to be at least a suffix in terms of her ability to marry a Kohen. So, as you can see, we have these four different, you know, generations potentially that are affected with respect to this question of the Jewish woman who has relations with a non-Jewish man. First generation, you know, what happens to the Bas Yisrael? According to pretty much all poskim, she's prohibited from marrying a Kohen after she engages in the relationship. Second generation, there are poskim who say that the children should not automatically even be considered Jewish. And there certainly were Shitos in the Gemara that way, and Rishonim that held that way, and even Achronim who held that it depends on how the child is brought up and so forth. But we assume the children are Jewish. The Ramban held that if it's a son, he can marry whomever he wants, but then his daughter can't marry a Kohen. We don't generally assume that way, but we do assume that the daughter can't marry a Kohen. There are three different opinions. Is that that she can't marry a Kohen, and if she did, she would absolutely have to get divorced, like the Rosh seems to indicate? Or is it that she's permitted to marry a Kohen at the end of the day, like the Rambam seems to indicate? Or that we're not sure, so therefore she shouldn't marry a Kohen in the first instance, but once they're married, they don't need to get divorced. Within that, do we say, in a dire situation when they're not married yet, we'll say that they can get married since they don't need to get divorced. That's what a number of Sephardic poskim and Eretz Yisrael say, but Moshe Feinstein follows the approach of the Shaar HaMelech, who disagrees, and even amongst the poskim and Eretz Yisrael, there's some pushback in some of the recent psakim to say that if it's not a question of helping people, that the people aren't going to become Baal Tshuva, or we're worried, they're arguably halakhically married already, and you don't have additional spekos as to whether the father is, you know, maybe really Jewish and the man's not really a Kohen, that you really shouldn't be lenient. And then finally, there's the question of when the daughter of this illicit relationship does marry a Kohen, is the son then a chalal, or do we treat him like a Kohen kosher? And the maskana seems to be that Aliba, most of the postgim, we do have to treat him like a Kohen kosher, at least in terms of not allowing him to marry a woman who would be prohibited to a Kohen, such as a Grusha or a Giyaris, and that he could get the Kohen Aliyah in order to underscore the fact that he still has to act with this degree of Kedusha, and Machlokes to Haposkim, whether he can Duchen or not. Sri Deish says that we're worried about, you know, Bracha Levatala, and Chalkos Yaakov saying that the disadvantages outweigh the benefits of preventing him from Duchening, so therefore it's better to allow him to Duchen. And of course, then you have the question: what happens in the next generation if this child should have? Do we say that he's a cholo, and therefore, if he marries, or do we say he's a kohen kosher? If he's a kohen kosher and he marries a grusha or a giyaris, what would be the status of the next generation? That degree of question, I don't think that I've received just yet. But that would also be obviously be a relevant question for further consideration. Yes.
We give Mechalei Shabbos and Aliyah. Are we going to be more machmer for this Kahuna situation than Mechalei Shabbos?
It's not a question giving an Aliyah. The question is giving a Kohen Aliyah.
So we're going to give
the question is he a Kohen? Get a Kohen Aliyah. So we'll give him the Kohen Aliyah, but he does have to be worried about, you know, a Suffolk Kolo, you know, type of situation. If he has a daughter, you know, so then it's a question whether she herself can marry a Kohen, even if he marries a regular Bas Yisrael.
Do we prevent a Kohen who's Mechal Shabbos from Duchening?
We do not generally prevent a Kohen who's Mechal Shabbos from Duchening, but he's definitely a Kohen. The question here is that the person might not be a Kohen. We generally don't say to a person that, oh, you're Yisrael, you want a Duchen, please, you know, step right up and Duchen. Uh-huh. The question, you know, there's a Yerushalmi about that, even if a Kohen has committed a veris, we allow the person to Duchen.
I was teaching about Phil Grove, who said he doesn't Duchen, because he's not Shomer Shabbos.
Yeah.
He fell into that Madrega, and he was what the principal called an Orthodox Jew in thought. But
okay, anyway, we're going to stop here, and we look forward to seeing you next Monday night. Okay, yes, I should.